Chapter 96. Kylar and Durzo approached the Hall of Winds together, unlimbering their swords as one. Both men were liberally spattered with blood. They paused outside a rosewood side door. "You ready?" Kylar asked. "I hate this part," Durzo said. "Relax. I killed 4 Verdmeisters once, didn't I?" Kylar asked, grinning evilly. "There are 200 Verdmeisters in there." "There is that," Kylar admitted. "All right. We do the Highlanders guarding the door in no more than 5 seconds. Then you draw the Verdmeister's attention, and I go for Nevdada," Durzo said. He shrugged. "It might work." "Not likely." Kylar patted Durzo's back. Muted light flared to the tip of Curoc. Kylar threw open the door, and Durzo dashed inside. The 4 Highlanders guarding the side door had their backs to them. In less than 2 seconds, all 4 were dying. Only after killing his 2 did Durzo allow himself to take in what everyone else was staring at. The Hall of Winds was a vast circle topped by a high dome without any interior supports. The entire panorama of the ceiling and the walls themselves was imbued with magic. Looking east, it was as if the walls weren't there. He could see Logan's men battling a Ferali. The presentation of what was happening outside continued as he looked south, but ended abruptly at a crack that had slivered down from the top of the dome. From south to west, the scene portrayed was of sunrise over the bustling city this once had been. It was a summer day. Ships crowded the river. The terraced hills were a tapestry of gardens, bearing 1,000 different kinds of flowers, and the city was vast beyond comprehension. Beyond the next crack was the night sky, half a moon shining brightly enough to cast shadows. Beyond that one was a narrow panel of a thunderstorm, with lightning flashing and rain falling in torrents. Other panels were dark, the magic gone, leaving plain stone. But none of these wonders were what held the Highlanders and Verdmeister's attention. In the middle of the domed room, the Verdmeisters stood in concentric circles around Nefdada, who held a thick scepter. At his feet, clutching a wrinkled leather fetish, was a slobbering Tensor Ursul. Every one of the Verdmeisters held the veer, and every one of them was linked to Nefdada, who stood at the center of a vast web of magic. Thick bands of every color disappeared into the floor and the earth itself, and he was manipulating the weight of 200 Verdmeisters' veer, expanding that web. Iuris was shifting in his hands, morphing faster than the eye could follow, twisting the web, expanding parts of it, pulling parts of it together. Neither swordsman hesitated. Kylar dashed along the outside of the circle, his sword at neck level like a kid running a stick along a slat fence, except this stick cut throats, leaving 20 men dead. Then, even as the first yells went up, he leapt 10 feet in the air and light exploded from him. Durzo ran straight for Nefdada, up one of the aisles, passing between dozens of chanting Verdmeisters. He was within 5 paces of the witch when Nef raised a hand. Durzo stopped instantly. He couldn't even bounce backward. Magic wrapped him every way. Nef extended his hand again, and the air gelled in a wall, cutting off Kylar and another score of Verdmeisters from the rest of the hall. Kylar plowed into them, and they, their veer still connected to Nef, could do nothing. In seconds, they were all dead. Neff reached with magic to grab Kylar, but the wet boy moved too fast. After a few seconds, Neff gave up. He threw up three more walls to make a wide cage, and then ignored him. Returning his attention to Ioris in his left hand, Neff began chanting once more. Ioris morphed again into retribution. Neff wrapped liver-spotted fingers through Tensor's hair and cut his throat open. Blood spilled all over the leather fetish Tensor held, hissing and spitting as if it were white hot. Tensor pitched over, dying as the magic released. There was a second sigh through the land. "It is finished," Nefdada declared. "All Jorsin's works are broken. Kali comes." He released the veer back to the 200 Verdmeisters in the room. He slipped into a coughing fit, and when it stopped, he turned to Durzo. With a gesture, the bonds holding Durzo fell away. "You must be Durzo Blint, or should I say, Prince Achilles Thorn?" "Oh, surprised? The Society of the Second Dawn has let its standards for membership slip, I'm afraid. I know all about you, Durzo Blint, even that you gave up the Black Kakari." "Poor choice." "Seemed good at the time," Durzo said, never shifting from his ready stance. "We're gonna do this or not?"
"No,"
Neff said. He turned to Kylar and gave a little mocking bow.
"Well met, Kylar Stern, Godslayer, Kakarifer. You're not using the Black Kakari."
"Why?"
"Lost it in a card game," Kylar said.
"Not a very good liar, are you? When a Kakari is surrendered willingly, it must serve its new master. They can be broken, but it takes time. I'm an old man. I'd like to bond the Black as soon as possible, but I can take it from your corpse if need be. If you don't give it to me, I'll kill your master. If the Society's right, this time he won't come back."
Kylar's face twisted. "My master understands about necessary sacrifices." Neff turned to Durzo.
"There you have it," he said.
A sliver of magic jutted out of Durzo's chest. Neff had stabbed him from behind. The magic faded and Durzo stood, weaving.
"Dishonorable," Durzo said.
His legs folded.
"What's honor? A 90-year-old man fighting you with a sword?"
But Durzo made no reply. He was already dead. Kylar made a wordless sound of protest, staring at the corpse with disbelief. It was like seeing the sun set at noon. He'd known that Durzo would die someday, but not now, not so easily. Not without a fight. Neff turned back to Kylar.
"One more chance. Give me the Black Kakari. That's all I want. I'll leave you to Kali. You may even escape."
Kylar drew himself to his full height and rolled his shoulders, loosening his muscles for action. "That sounds like a great deal." "But there's three problems," Kylar said. He smiled. "First, I'm not Kylar." He laughed, and his face morphed into one leaner, pockmarked, with a wispy blonde beard. He was Durzo Blint. "Second, that corpse isn't Durzo."
"What?"
"Third," he continued, "if someone would move his ass..." He cleared his throat. Neff turned belatedly. In a smooth action, the corpse stood and was Kylar. Shields flew up around the Verdmeister. Skin sheathed in black metal, face covered by the mask of judgment, Kurok sliding out of his fists as white-hot claws,
Kylar punched. The Verdmeister's shields popped like soap bubbles. Claws of Kurok crossed on either side of the Verdmeister's spine, 8 bloody points poking out of his back. "Third, I'm not dead," Kylar said, lifting Neff off the ground. "And this is Kurok."
"Shit, that's 4 things, isn't it?" Durzo said.
Nefdada screamed. He threw his arms out spastically. The veer leapt to the surface of every inch of his skin. Neff shrieked and shrieked as white light blasted through every vein of veer. Kylar roared and ripped the claws in opposite directions, shearing the Verdmeister in half. The walls surrounding Durzo evaporated into nothing, and there was silence in the Hall of Winds. Kylar sheathed Kurok on his back and gingerly picked up Ioris. He tossed it to Durzo.
"You could have given me a few more seconds," Kylar said. "You just taught me rapid healing 10 minutes ago. What if I hadn't gotten it right on the first try?"
Durzo grinned. "Bastard." An earthquake rocked the ground. Kylar looked at the dome, hundreds of feet overhead, swaying out of time with the ground. At Kylar's feet, he saw the focus through which Neff had been pulling all the power he'd worked on with Ioris. It was a leather bundle, ancient, cracked and yellowing, with gems sewn into it and a horrid, desiccated, hairless, boneless skull grinning formlessly from the front. It could only be one thing. This horror was Kali. He hefted Kurok and jammed its point through the fetish. A dozen Verdmeisters cried out, but nothing happened. There was a hiss of escaping air, and the section of the floor beneath the fetish and Kurok sank. Kylar stepped back, and the floor opened like a coffin lid. There was a woman inside. Her hair was long and blonde, carefully arrayed in small braids and curls. Her long lashes were closed, her cheeks flushed, full lips pink, skin flawless alabaster. For some reason, to Kylar's eyes, the girl was a collection of details that refused to coalesce into a woman. A familiar dimple here, the sweep of her neck. Her dress was white silk, slim cut to her figure, backless, more daring or more scandalous than anything Eline would have worn. "Eline." Kylar staggered back. "Eline." Her lips curved into a smile. She drew a breath. Lovely brown eyes opened. Kylar's knees went weak. She reached out a regal hand, and when he took it, she rose almost magically to her feet. Every move spoke perfect grace.
You don't have any scars,"
Kylar said.
"I can't stand ugliness. I want to be beautiful for you," Eline said. And she smiled, and every part of her was beauty. "Kylar," she said gently. "I need Kurok." He looked into her smiling face and was lost. Through the Kakari, Eline looked like an archmage. Magic swirled thickly around her. Eline wasn't talented, but this was Eline.
His heart froze. Distantly, he heard the main doors of the hall bang open. His knees hit the floor.
"Kylar, no!"
Vi shouted. Numbly, Kylar watched the doors open wide. Following Vi was Logan, one arm glowing green. Solon, Logan's old advisor, wearing a crown. The mountainous Fir Kusat. four Magi, all greatly talented. Dorian the Prophet, Lord General Aegon Brandt, and Captain Caldrosa Wynne with 50 of Aegon's dogs. The scent of Aelene filled Kylar's nostrils as she stepped close. What had she done? His eyes snapped open as Aelene snatched Curoch from his limp fingers. The look in Aelene's eyes was foreign. She looked intoxicated as she gazed at the blade. She laughed and twirled.
Trace, that's enough, Durzo said suddenly.
She stopped abruptly and stared at Durzo, disbelieving. A Kalis? No, it can't be.
Hand it over, Trace. And the white Kakari, too. Release that girl's body.
Aelene's eyes narrowed.
It is you.
What happened to you, Trace? You were one of the champions. Jorson trusted you. We all did.
What have you become? Durzo asked.
I am Kali.
At the word, the Verdmeisters dropped to their faces. She laughed again.
Look at my pets. So humble, and every one of them scheming even now.
She looked around the Hall of Winds. She gestured with Curoch, and every crack in the dome was sealed, the scene unified. A spring day, mountains purple in the distance, flowers everywhere.
Do you remember this, Achilles? We were supposed to be married here.
Her white dress shifted like liquid metal, shimmering into a high-necked, full green gown with thousands of crystals sewn into it.
You were beautiful.
I was a hag,
she shot back. Bad teeth, bad skin, crooked back.
Then Ezra gave me the white Kakari. I heard you quarreling with him. You betrayed me first, Achilles. You left me here in my wedding gown, shamed me in front of everyone. I waited hours. I was finally beautiful. And all you were was jealous.
Durzo's face was gray, and bits and pieces that Kylar had heard over the years fell into place. To save the black Kakari and keep its incredible power secret, Jorson had given it to the betrayer, Achilles. Achilles hadn't even been able to tell his fiancée that he had it, and knowing that he would soon have to act the betrayer, Achilles had fled rather than marry. All without a word of explanation. Kylar remembered Durzo snarling at him when he was a child,
I will not allow you to ruin yourself over a girl.
Mama Kay had said women had always been Durzo's downfall. The wolf had said Durzo had once done something worse than take money for a death. Kylar had guessed it was suicide. But it was worse than that. Knowing the price of immortality was that someone he loved died in his place. Durzo had killed himself, hoping to kill Trace. But Trace, an archmage in her own right and the smartest of the champions, had figured out a way around the Black Kakari's death sentence.
Achilles and I always knew there was something strange about that death. We knew she fought the magic for months, but then her body died. We never tried to think of her again.
Jealous? Durzo said. I had the Black Kakari, the most powerful of them all. Ezra and I quarreled because he gave you a Kakari that confirmed a lie you believed.
You weren't ugly then, Trace.
You're ugly now.
Look what you've done. For 7 centuries the North has labored under your darkness.
This is what Trace Arva Gulania turned her mind to? This is what you created? Why?
For immortality,
the Kakari breathed to Kylar. Kylar could tell it was understanding for the first time.
The white Kakari can create a glamour so powerful It can be used for compulsion. She tried to turn her Kakari into a dark imitation of me, using it to compel worship, and then trying to steal life from her willing worshippers. But it didn't work, because the soul of my magic is love, and love cannot be compelled. Trace has been disembodied until she could find someone who loves in a way that is totally foreign to what she has become. Someone willing, without compulsion, to let Trace have her body. Now, she'd found that person at long last. Eileen. Why? I do it because I wish it. I am Kali. I am goddess. Someone has to pay the price for immortality. Tell me, Achilles, who's paid for yours?
Durzo paled. Too many people. Come, Trace. Our time is done.
My time has just begun. Kurok became a slender staff in her hand, and she raised it. A black cloud exploded in every direction, then disappeared. The walls of the Hall of Winds became clear as glass, showing the dark battlefield to every side. Do you remember when Jorsen faced the grand armies of the Fallen? Kali asked. He could have stopped them, if he'd listened to me. He didn't have to fight them. He could have controlled them. He was a greater mage than Roy Garris. These armies could have been Jorsen's. He could have simply taken them from Roy Garris. We could have won.
As she spoke, it slowly became clear that the sudden darkness on the battlefield was moving, standing up. The black blanket was countless thousands of Krull corpses rising from 7 centuries of death, standing, healing, and moving into ranks. Earlier in the day, even with 150,000 men and Krull fighting, all the armies together had occupied only a wedge of the plain south of the Hall of Winds. At Kali's gesture with Kurok, Krull rose in a writhing black ocean north, south, east, and west, as far as the eye could see. Kylar saw the titan he'd killed get back to its feet. Dozens more like it stood around the battlefield. Beasts that dwarfed even Harani bulls rose. Birds great and small rose in clouds. Fire ants by the thousands. Flying beasts, beautiful fanged children, brute wolves, great cats, horses with bone scythes extending from each shoulder, Ferali by the hundreds. Kylar's mind couldn't take it all in. Jorsen had faced this? The allied armies had reached the hall, and now they turned outward, back to back, guarding the hilltop in a circle dwarfed by the numbers of Krull they were about to face.
I can banish them, Kali said. All of them. But I need Eurus to banish the strangers. What do you say, Achilles? Will you watch everyone you love die a second time?
You'll not have Eurus from my hand, Durzo said.
So be it, Kali said. Kylar, kill them. Kill all of them.
Her words washed over him with the whip-crack of authority. He recognized it as a compulsion spell, even as he rose to obey. The spell was the full-grown older sister to the spell Gareth had laid on Vi, akin to the glamour Vi had used on him the first time they'd met, when she'd tried to kill him. But where that glamour had been anchored only by Vi's attractiveness, this compulsion hit every note from lust to awe at standing in front of another immortal, a goddess. It pulled on his adoration for Eileen, his loyalty and trust for her as his wife. She was princess, goddess, immortal, lover, companion, wife. and all those bonds were amplified 100-fold through Kurok. There was no question of disobedience. Kylar stood. The black Kakari formed twin swords in his hands. It was trying to speak to him, tell him how to combat the magic she was bombarding him with. But to use the Kakari, he had to want to use it, and the compulsion stole his very willpower. He looked into Eileen's big eyes, and nothing mattered but pleasing her. Even as his heart despaired, and he wanted nothing more than to throw himself on his own swords, he wanted to please her more.
"Kylar, stop! I command you!"
Vi shouted, advancing alone from among the Magi. The command flashed like lightning through Kylar's compulsive wedding earrings to the core of his being. It felt like he'd be falling from a great height, only to have a rope tied around his wrists suddenly stop his fall. Kylar gasped with pain and stopped. Kali paused, surprised. She looked at Vi.
"Dear girl," she said, "don't you know what happens when a woman contends with a goddess?"
She turned to Kylar and put a hand on her stomach.
"My love, you wouldn't betray the mother of your child, would you?"
He couldn't breathe. Eileen's stomach was indeed slightly swollen. His child. The sudden delight on Kali's face told him it was true. Eileen was pregnant. She'd known. She hadn't told him. The new claim to his loyalty added another layer to the power of the compulsion spell.
"Darling, kill them. Starting with that slut,"
Kali said. The command snapped tight like a rope around his ankles. He felt himself being torn between compulsions like a man on the rack. One of the mages chose that moment to loose a fireball. It fizzled before it went an arm's length. Kali made a little snatching motion, and Kylar saw every Glorvurden in the room emptied in an instant. The magi were left gasping.
"Kylar, help me,"
Vi cried. She fell to her knees, concentrating on him, sending strength to him. She reached for the nearest elements of their bond, his guilt at what he'd put her through, how he owed her better, and his desire for her. Kali matched those, and overmatched them. Kali tugged on what he owed Eileen, on his desire for her, on the moments they'd shared making love. The compulsion spell worked by magnifying whatever hold a person had, whether authority or love or lust or obedience. Fueled with the might of Kurok, it almost obliterated Kylar's mind. Kylar raised his swords and started walking toward Vi. He could feel Kali's triumph, her pleasure at her mastery of him. Vi's eyes held as he walked closer. She reached up and pulled out the band that held her braid. Her hair spilled down like a copper waterfall. For the first time in her life, Vi made no attempt to protect herself. No attempt to cover this one thing that she had kept private as she had lost all else. She spread her open hands and dropped the threads of lust and guilt in their bond. Kylar saw her then as he'd never seen her before. He saw the nights of agony with which she had paid for his nights of pleasure with Eileen. He saw how gladly she'd done that for him. And at what cost? Vi loved him fiercely. Kylar missed a step as she clung to that single cord, love, with all her might. She looked up at him as he drew the twin swords back.
Kylar, she said quietly, at complete peace. I trust you.
Then, impossibly, she released the bond. Every claim she had to him, she dropped. She let him owe her nothing, not friendship, not honor, not dignity, not friendship, not her life. Nothing at all. With no claim to magnify, their wedding earrings failed. It shook him like a bell had rung from his ears through his whole body. It shook him from his suddenly freed wrists down to his bound ankles, and there, Kali had no answer to this kind of love. She knew only taking. It was like two people had been playing tug of war, and one released the rope. All the magic held in tension by the wedding ring rushed outward, toward Kali. Kylar felt the huge wave of power passing through him as the vast pressures of the bond released into her, their force doubled and redoubled by her own pull on them. There was a giant crack that rattled Kylar's teeth. Something tinged on the marble floor. It was Kylar's earring. The earrings were broken. The bond was broken. The compulsion had vanished. Kylar couldn't feel Vi. Or Kali. He was free of both of them. 10 paces away, Kali was rocking on her heels, stunned.
I'm so sorry, Kylar, Kali said.
But the tone was Eline's. Kylar was at her side in an instant.
Eline?
She pushed Kurok into his hands.
Quickly, quickly, I can't stop her, she's recovering.
What are you talking about? Kylar asked. Honey? Tears were rolling down Eline's face.
Wasn't Vi magnificent? I'm so proud of her, I knew she could do it. You take care of her, all right?
I'm not letting you go. Her eyes filled with sudden pain, and her jaw tightened as a convulsion passed through her.
You know how I used to think I'd never be important like you are? I found it, Kylar. I found something I can do that no one else can. The god told me. Kali could only possess someone who let her, but she didn't know I can hold her in. You can kill her once and for all. You can kill the Vir.
But I can't kill them without killing you, he said. She took his hand and smiled gently, acknowledging it. She was more beautiful than anything he'd ever imagined.
No!
He shouted. The ground shook. Kylar looked through the clear walls and saw one of the Titans pick up an entire building and hurl it at the Allies. It crushed hundreds. There was no time. He looked back to Eline just as another spasm passed through her frame.
But, Kurok, he said, it can kill me. If it does, the spell that makes people die for me will be broken. I can still save you.
Kylar heard Durzo curse behind him, but he ignored him.
Kylar, Eline said. When Roth or Sul killed you, that first time before we knew you were immortal, I prayed that I could trade my life to save yours. I thought the god said yes. I was so sure of it that I dragged you out of that castle. Later, I told myself that it was just a coincidence. But God did say yes. Yes, in his time, not mine. My death then would have accomplished nothing. Now I can do something no one else can. Please, Kylar, Don't be too proud to accept my sacrifice.
He clutched her hand convulsively. He was crying. He couldn't stop.
You're pregnant.
Tears coursed down her cheeks.
Kylar, there are so many people we love here. I'd give our son for them. Won't you?
No, no.
Eileen held his face in her hands and kissed him gently.
I love you. I'm not afraid. Quickly now.
The ground shook again, and outside, choruses of magic rose into the sky. Whatever Krull had been raised, some of the newer ones had talent. But inside, no one moved. They all knew that their fates and the fates of all Mid-Kryu's nations were balanced on Kurok's edge. Kylar pulled Eileen into his arms and hugged her fiercely. Sobs burst from him. He drew back Kurok and slid it into her side. She gasped, squeezing him. As Kurok pierced Kali, light exploded, engulfing him in fire. It was clean and hot and purifying. Kylar thought he might be dead. He hoped he was.